Blog Talk Radio.
Andrew, before we begin, we need to say hello to someone.
Oh, yes, I think we do.
So I haven't seen this yet, but there's been word on the street is that there was a Steven Seagal reference on Impact this week.
Oh, man, that sounds familiar.
It sounds very familiar. Mm-hmm. I'm not cracking one open for the working man, as Steve Austin says. I'm just opening a Diet Coke. So was it last week or the week before that we had a very heavy Steven Seagal conversation?
You know, it could be any week because a lot of things like that happened, but I do believe it was last week where we really went into the Steven Seagal hole.
So to refresh people, then, Steven Seagal is referenced numerous times on our show a week ago.
Mm-hmm.
And then there's a Steven Seagal reference on Impact like 4 days later? That can't be a coincidence, right?
I mean, that's what they say. There's no such thing as coincidences. So now we just gotta hope that this Rob Terry thing comes true.
If the Rob Terry, yeah, I mean, if Rob Terry ever returns, then we know they're listening. But I guess who do we think is listening? Is it Scott D'Amore listening? Is Tom Hannafin listening? I don't know who made the reference. If it was Hannafin,
I think it was Alex Shelley or Chris Sabin, actually.
Oh, so maybe they're listening then. Okay,
yeah.
All right then.
Big fans.
I mean, I don't think it has anything to do with the fact that they have a show called Under Siege coming up, and that was a Seagal movie. It definitely no
zero.
I mean, maybe when did they name the? No, I was going to say. Did they name the show Under Siege because of our Steven Seagal references? I mean, that's another possibility.
I think that's another possibility too, and maybe the following pay per view could be like. Trying to think of another Steven Seagal movie.
Oh, I thought you were going to go Rob Terry. I thought the next pay per view is going to be called Big Robbie T or something.
Just call it Big Rob, and it's going to do probably their best. A buy rate ever.
Well, speaking of good buy rates, by the way, if you want to join us, 515-605-9345. Speaking of good buy rates, it's not really a buy rate, but a I don't know, ticket rate, ticket sales, whatever you want to call it. I don't remember. I know we were talking about the pre-sale last week and how, you know, it doesn't necessarily mean tickets sold, but it could. It kind of depends on whether or not those people actually convert their reservations or pre-sale reservations into sales. And well, damn, it seems like a lot of them did. What was it, like 35,000 tickets sold for All In for AEW and night or day one of the pre-sale? I think they're up to like 50 now.
I think it might even be 60 at this point.
Is it real? Oh, my God.
I thought I saw that earlier today. Yeah.
That's unbelievable.
Yeah, that's pretty bonkers. That's if it's 60, that's already three times more than they've ever done. I think their biggest show before that was like 21,000. So to like triple that is insane. And I saw this too. WCW never sold that many tickets for one show.
Really? Not even like the Georgia Dome?
No. I think Georgia was like 35 ish, something like that.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, that makes sense. Yeah. Cause sold tickets probably. Yeah.
Yeah. So that's pretty crazy that's one of the, I guess the biggest non-WWE show ever, unless like a New Japan had a bigger show or anything that I'm not aware of. But
yeah, I wonder what like the Tokyo Dome draw. I just don't know.
I feel that's like 40,000-50,000. I could be wrong, but
so I mean it's definitely up there. Mm-hmm. And not to mention, I think this tells you how strong the AEW brand is over there, because look, we were talking about last week, they haven't even announced a match yet. They have announced zero matches. They haven't announced a talent roster. Like they haven't announced anything. They're selling tickets on this solely from the standpoint of it's AEW's first show in the UK.
Yeah, that's nuts. Yeah, I mean, people probably suspect like a, you know, like CM Punk and Sting are going to be there, but we don't know that for sure. And to sell that many tickets without like listing a single thing, it could just be like a garbage show. Nobody knows. I'm assuming they'll put in a great effort, but Yeah, that's kind of crazy. Just like that many people are so excited to see AEW in a different continent.
Yeah, and look, I think, as we said before, too, it's definitely because it's the first one, right?
Yeah.
Like, there will be, like, even, like, you look at the WWE crowd over the weekend in Puerto Rico, it was exceptional. It was the first time they've had a pay-per-view, I think, in almost 20 years. So, you know, there's a reason, and there's not television. You don't see television coming from Puerto Rico very much for wrestling. So, you know, I think if they were to do that every week, if they were to go to Puerto Rico, you know, every 3 months for a pay-per-view, you would, you know, those crowds wouldn't be as hot as it was on Saturday. So, but that's going to be the truth anywhere. Still, though, it was, I still think, a gamble on AEW's part, and it paid off. But
mm-hmm.
because you just don't know. I mean, like we said before, the worst thing in the world could have been they do this and they draw 20,000 people. And then, you know, people like us are sitting there going, well, geez, you just could have run the arena for 20,000 people.
Yeah.
it looks like they're going to do, you know, roughly 3 arena pulls, if not more. And now the only question now is, are we going to be able to see it? I mean, I would assume so. It seems like All Out still going to be a pay-per-view the very next week.
Yeah.
So I think back-to-back pay-per-views is going to be really hard to do. I think back-to-back shows is going to be really hard to do. 2 big cards on back-to-back weekends. Like, the only question now is, how are we going to see it? I have to imagine it's not just going to be a house show.
just like, yeah. Probably not.
I mean, I guess that's a possibility, though. I mean, theoretically.
Like they just wouldn't air it at all.
Yeah, I mean, with nothing announced, we just don't know.
Yeah.
My guess is that it streams somewhere.
Yeah, I wonder if it's going to be like Max, the HBO name change. If that's, I don't know, maybe it'll just be that. I mean, maybe that's like the most likely thing right now. Because I can't imagine, like, if TNT TBS going to put that on it, like, 4 in the afternoon.
Yeah, I don't think so. I agree with you. I think the most likely destination is a streaming service like Max. So it's not HBO Max. You're getting rid of HBO Max. It's just Max now. But I think that makes the most sense for a couple of reasons. You're not tying up television time in the middle of the afternoon. It's now something where you can stream live if you're going to watch it at 4 in the afternoon or whatever time it's going to be. Or if you're not around till Saturday night to watch it, well, I mean, you can just stream it as soon as you want to. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like WWE's pay-per-views on Peacock. Like, you could watch it live, or you could watch it at midnight the same night that it airs on demand. So the streaming service is what makes the most sense to me. But it's still going to be a challenge, I think. I mean, even if you're not requiring people to buy a show 2 weeks in a row, which would be, I think that's a tall ask, you still have to find a way to build 2 big cards on back-to-back weeks.
Mm-hmm.
Kind of, because I think there's also some argument to be made that, like, they've already sold 60,000 tickets. So you want the UK show to be good, but if there's a match where you're like, you know, I'd really like to save this for the pay-per-view and not do it on the UK show, you probably can't because you've already sold your tickets. So and if it's not a pay-per-view, it doesn't really matter.
Yeah, I mean, there's still millions more. I mean, Tony Khan was, like, showing, or, you know, bragging, I guess, on Twitter that they've already made, what, like, $7 million in ticket sales, something like that.
Yeah.
And there's, I don't know what they usually draw, but there's still millions more to be made on the following pay-per-view. So they will have to, like, hold some stuff back. I mean, they're going to for sure do, like, a few big matches, but, I mean, you can't do everything on one show. So it's going to be interesting how they're going to split that up.
You almost have to book it in a way where you've got, I mean, WrestleMania is 2 nights now, right?
Yeah.
So you almost have to book it. It's like, well, All In's are WrestleMania if you're AEW. So we're going to do like a night 1 and a night 2, only instead of doing it back-to-back nights, we're going to do it on consecutive Saturdays.
Oh, that's, like, interesting. That's, yeah.
They may not say that, but I'm just thinking from like Tony's standpoint and booking it.
Yeah.
That's almost how you have to approach it from a booking standpoint. Because you could do things on the All In show that leak into All Out the following week, and you know what I mean, like
mm-hmm.
like you would do with night 1 and night 2 of WrestleMania or New Japan or anything like that. So that's almost how they have to approach it, or how Tony has to approach it, I think.
Yeah, I think that's an interesting route to go. I mean, I wonder what it's going to be like. Say if it is on Max, it's going to be weird that, you know, you're paying what, like $14 a month to watch Max. And if you already have it, it's essentially like free to watch the pay-per-view. And then the next week, you're spending like $50-some dollars. So that'll be, don't know. I'm curious. But I'm also, like, I don't know why, like, Max hasn't tried this already. Because if we saw, like, you saw online today that WWE was bragging how well Backlash did and how it did, like, 90% better than last year, I think. Something to that effect in viewership for Peacock. Like, how does Max not want to get in on that and do something similar? Like, it just seems like such a no-brainer at this point.
Yeah, you would think so. I would think they would just want to get something announced as quickly as possible, you know, so that there's not this big mystery. And there's plenty of time. I mean, we're only in May.
Yeah.
But, you know, I don't think this cloud of mystery over, like, how are people going to be able to watch the show? Are people going to be able to watch the show? Maybe Tony thinks it helped drive ticket sales. I don't really buy that. You know, thinking like, oh, well, we have to, if we don't announce how it's, you're going to be able to watch it, people are going to have to buy tickets to get in. We need to sell the tickets first. I just don't buy that that's real. Like, mm-hmm. I think people that in the UK that are going to want to go are going to want to go regardless of whether or not it streams or is on pay-per-view or you could watch it at home. Like, people are going to want to go because they want to go. Like, I don't think they've sold any extra tickets because, I don't think there's anyone in London right now that's going, I want to see this show and they might not stream it, so I better get a ticket so I can get in and see it. I think that is absurd. But I have heard that argument made that they're not announcing the TV yet because, like, well, they want to sell the tickets first. It's like, I just don't think that's – I don't think any fan thinks that way. Like, oh, if I can watch it from home, I'll stay home. But if I can't watch it from home, I'm going to go buy a ticket.
I wonder if it's something like – the rumors are that they're going to announce a new – TV deal, perhaps, or at least the debut of Collision. Maybe this is, like, all tied together somehow, and they just need to wait, like, 10 more days to say, like, oh, and by the way, part of this new deal is we're going to run quarterly specials on Max, and the first one is All In.
Yeah.
Could be.
That could be. I don't think they want to wait for Collision this long, but, I mean, you could also make this the first Collision.
I think isn't the first one in Chicago?
They had taping set up, I think, in Chicago for like June or July, right?
Yeah, I think it's mid-June, which is not that long away. That's like six weeks.
That's why I don't think that's what they would do or what they're going to do, but you can make the argument of like if TBS is willing to give you a three-hour block on a Saturday afternoon, make that the first Collision. Like, you know,
oh,
what I mean?
gotcha, yes.
And then you could replay it that night or whatever. I mean, it'll be interesting to see what they end up doing with it. My guess, though, is, I mean, Max makes the most sense. I think from the fact that it's a UK show, it's going to air live at a weird time. People may want to watch it on demand later in the day. Max just makes the most sense to me.
I think so, too. I think it's just going to be too much to ask people to pay $50 2 weeks in a row. Because I think they kind of have to maybe frame it like this is like our big week of the year. Like this is our WrestleMania, but WrestleMania, I mean, it's just to like go back to Peacock. That's why like $5 a month to watch and you get both nights and to say like, well, you're going to have to pay 20 times that amount to see our two pay-per-views. Yeah. I think not going to go that over that well.
I don't think so either. All right. We're going to move on to some other topics. We'll get to some emails in a minute. If you are on the line and want to join in, hit the number one. If you're currently on hold, that tells us you want to get on the air. If you are not on hold yet but want to get on the air with us, the number is 515-605-9345. If you're listening to us on demand in the podcast feed, that's cool too. We like that. But if you want to talk to us on a Monday night, if you have some wrestling stuff you want to talk about during Raw, specifically AEW related, of course, you can call us up on Monday nights at 9 p.m. Eastern time. That's when we record the show. And the number is 515-605-9345. A couple of other things to hit on before we get to some emails and callers if they end up in the queue. We were texting about this yesterday.
Yeah.
Tony, if Tony Khan is listening, like we know Impact is, but if Tony's listening, I think our advice to him would be to learn how to say no to people.
Yeah.
Because, you know, things like broken Matt Hardy don't need to be on AEW television. I don't care what show it is. It just doesn't need to be on TV.
That was close to the most annoyed I've ever been with AEW watching that and just going, man, this was like, this played itself out like 7 years ago.
Yeah.
And it just, it's supernatural nonsense too. Like, why out of everyone on the roster does Tony Khan go like, okay, like mid-carder Matt Hardy gets to have supernatural powers? Because the skit started out with them like teleporting tonight and the drones coming out. But yeah, this was from Impact in 2016, 2017. And we've said this before. Like, that thing ran its course. People were super into it at first, and then the ratings just went down. Like, people were tired of it. And that was 6 years ago.
It got boring.
It did get boring, yeah. And
it was great that summer. The first match with Jeff, when they did the first cinematic match, like, that was awesome.
Yeah.
That summer, it was great. And I remember you and I talking about it, because like, it started in probably June of, I forget the year. Maybe, I think it was 17. It may have been 16. But it started in the summer. We weren't even doing the show yet, I don't think. But it started that summer in like June, and it was really good through the fall. But then we had started doing the show, I think, early in the following year.
Yep.
And by like February or March, whatever it was, we were like, all right, enough. It's been the same thing now for 9 months. Like, enough is enough.
Yeah. And just like, it's so self-indulgent. Like, Matt brings in his kids to beat up Stokely Hathaway. And I mean, I know Stokely Hathaway is like a joke character, but having like a 5-year-old beat him up, like, I don't want that crap on TV. That's WWE garbage. Like, it was one of the worst things they've done. Yeah, in my opinion, like, to me, like, it's just not funny anymore. The joke played itself out. And yeah,
well,
Tony should.
Well, that's kind of I would say that's kind of like, what's the point?
Yeah.
What's the purpose of it? Are we trying to get Matt Hardy's kid over? No. Does it matter if you bury Stokely Hathaway? I mean, no, he's not a wrestler. He's a manager, so I guess it doesn't matter. But just what's the point? Like, you've only got so much television time, and you got a million guys on your roster and girls that need TV time. So every single second of television time needs to serve a purpose, because they don't have any to waste. So what exactly did that do? Like, what was that for? To me, it was a complete waste of television time, and they can't afford to be wasting any television time.
No, I mean, I was just watching that, and I was like, I felt bad for everyone involved. Like, Big Bill did a great job in Impact, like, turning his career around and being, like, a valuable member of that roster. And then he goes to AEW, does pretty much nothing of note. He just, like, loses every match he's in, and he has to, like, take part in this. And I'm just thinking, like, why is, like, he being used to put over, like, Matt Hardy at this point in his career? Like, it should be the other way around. Like, Bill should be destroying Matt Hardy in 2 minutes on TV. It made Hook look a lot lamer for having participate in that. And Jeff Hardy, like, he's a legend in his own right, but to have him come back and do this, like, it's his first meaningful or his first big thing, it just felt like a waste.
Yeah, I don't see the purpose of it, you know. It'd be one thing if there was a purpose behind it. I just don't see the purpose to it. I don't see any sort of purpose to it.
And the ratings stunk, too. It was 294,000. And I know the show was on at a different time, but, like, if people were genuinely excited to see this thing from 8 years ago, they would have tuned in. But they're not. They didn't. So.
You would have I think you would have received, you know, social media buzz and everything else. But it's just, there really wasn't any of that. I mean, I think other than people groaning about it, it wasn't anything that anybody was going to remember.
No. Maybe on AEW right now it has 2 million views or something, which I doubt it does, but I haven't seen anywhere people, like, talking about this.
No, me neither. Do you think that the BCC versus Elite storyline is the absolute apex of professional wrestling right now, the way that Jon Moxley does?
I mean, I'm entertained by it.
I'm entertained by it, too. Calling it the apex of the entire industry of all time is a little...
Oh, did he say that?
Oh, no, but I mean, that's kind of what you're referring to, I think. When you use the term apex, right?
Mm-hmm.
I think that you're kind of... You're saying that it's a legendary thing that is... you know, you're saying it's the top of the business. It's the very top.
Did he say that on air, or did he say it off air?
I forget where I copy pasted the quote. I don't remember where I found it from. I think it was in an interview.
Oh, really? Oh, that's interesting. Because I was like, I guess if he's saying it on the show, I'm like,
yes,
I guess
it was an interview with Sports Illustrated.
Oh.
The BCC versus Elite rivalry is the absolute apex of professional wrestling right now. We're going to have a great crowd, and we have a steel cage match. It's got all the ingredients for a really memorable night. Talking about this week, of course.
I mean, I guess we're talking about this week in and of itself. Like, it's the biggest thing going on. I guess I could go for that, but...
I would agree. Yeah.
Yeah, but the future...
And he did say right now, so, like, yeah, at this moment in time, sure.
Unless you count Natalya returning to challenge Rhea Ripley. I have Raw on in the corner of my screen.
Well, I mean, that, yeah, that's the apex of the business on Monday, but he's talking about Wednesday.
Oh, that's right. That's right. Yeah. There we go.
Things can change between now and then. But no, all kidding aside, this does look like a pretty decent episode of Dynamite this week, I would say. It's built around a very big match. But, I mean, I like the way they've built this show. This feels like this Wednesday show feels like a destination show, I would say, like in terms of, like, big developments are going to happen.
Yeah, I mean, they really loaded it up. It looks like it's all gimmick matches, which makes me want to ask you the question, what is a double Jeopardy match?
I was going to ask you that. I don't know.
I have no idea. I mean, I guess it's based, you know, maybe they have to, like, watch the Double Jeopardy film with, like, and like Tommy Lee Jones was in it, and I'm blanking on her name, so this joke doesn't work.
Yeah, I know who you're talking about, though. I can picture her.
I can picture her.
Yes, Wednesday's Dynamite has a double I'm trying to see if I can find an explanation anymore. Double Jeopardy match. The winner earns a title shot. ROH Tag Team Champion Rey Fénix versus ROH World Champion Claudio Castagnoli. So the winner earns a title shot against MJF? I mean, I don't really understand.
I don't get that. And I also didn't know Fénix was the ROH champ. Did you? Or take champ.
He's a tag. Yes. They won it at the pay-per-view, I believe.
Huh. I mean, I guess I remember seeing a clip of that, but it didn't register in my brain.
Yeah, they don't talk about it on Dynamite, so you never know.
Yeah.
Let me see this article has any explanation. Tony Khan from May 6th at 4:20 a.m.
Jeez.
He tweeted, at this time last night, when I finally cracked the code after racking my brain all night and came up with Rey Fénix versus Claudio Castagnoli, double Jeopardy match for Detroit this Wednesday. It's a gif of George Costanza breaking into Jerry Seinfeld's apartment, yelling, I got it. The double Jeopardy match comes with Castagnoli, currently the reigning ROH world champion, while Fénix is one half of the world tag team champions. Whoever wins their one-on-one bout will earn a title shot against the other at some point in the future. So, okay, so I guess if Fénix wins, he gets a world title shot. If Claudio wins, he's going to have to find a partner and get the tag team title shot.
Huh.
Double Jeopardy.
I mean, that's silly. It's also silly that he's up at 4 in the morning. There's a lot of questions there. But also...
Well, he has 7 jobs. So, I mean, sleeping. He sleeps on Tuesdays.
Oh, that's right. He sleeps on Tuesdays.
He's kind of like a vampire. Like, they put him in a coffin, and they lower him into the ground for a little bit, and they bring him back up, and he's awake for the next 5 days.
I can imagine that. The other thing, too, is, like, who cares about... No offense to Ring of Honor, but, like, who cares? why is this on TV? Like,
it's never on. They never talk about it anymore, but here it is.
Yeah.
I saw a clip. Have you watched any of AEW All Access?
I've watched not a lot. I can't handle reality TV that much, so a few minutes here and there.
And I think reality is a loose definite. We're using the term loosely here. I've never watched a show live, but I had someone send me a clip today that I thought was hilarious but also interesting at the same time. Did you see this clip going around of when he talks to Sammy Guevara backstage in his office? Tony Khan does, I mean.
No.
So there's a clip. I think it was on All Access. Somebody sent it to me today. And Tony's just walking through the hallways. And you know that, like, concerned, quizzical look Tony gets on his face sometimes?
Yeah.
Like, he'll, like, scrunch up his eyes. And you see him walking down, the back hallway. And he just yells out. He's like, are you okay? Are you okay? And the camera pans over to Sammy Guevara, who goes, can we talk in your office for a minute?
Oh, man.
So they duck into Tony's office.
Oh, my God.
And, I mean, it's not real, but it's the worst acting ever. Tony's like, what's the matter? What do you need to talk to me about, Sammy? Like, it's so bad. And Sammy wants to talk about, you know, what he's doing on TV or whatever. But what I found interesting is Tony then pulls out this piece of paper and unfolds it to show Sammy, these are the plans we have for you, Sammy. And it's literally like a giant, it's almost like a, it's not like a piece of paper out of a notebook. It's almost like a long piece of construction paper or something. Like it's a very wide piece of paper. And he unfolds it, and he's got all these boxes are written, and it's like it's his booking sheet, literally written in pen on this paper for like the next 2 months worth of TV. Because he's like, Sammy, you can see, so we're going to do this here, and then this angle on this show, and then you guys are going to have that match here, and then you're going to go here, and then we're going to go to this, and then that gets us to the pay-per-view. And they're not really showing what the plans are, because obviously they're trying to keep, you know, some things not for television.
Yeah.
But it was like, I found it very interesting that if this is to be believed, Tony Khan is booking his multi-million dollar company with chicken scratch notes on a piece of paper.
That he keeps in his pocket?
That he keeps in his pocket. That he can whip out in a moment. Not like on a computer, not on his phone. You know, technology at our fingertips, and we're scribbling on paper. That's what I found to be very interesting about that whole scene.
Oh, that's nuts. Didn't they just hired somebody to help with that, right? Like with storylines and keeping them straight, and he has like 10 different jobs. I forget his name, but
maybe because Tony's boxes that he hand drew on a piece of paper was not going well, and I don't know.
I feel bad for that guy if he just has to like translate that, and you know,
he needs to at all times be aware of what Tony is thinking.
Oh, that's nuts. 4 a.m. Like, shouldn't he just know, like, from a image standpoint that he's like, I can wait a few hours to do this? Because otherwise people are just going to be like, what the hell is he doing up at 4 a.m?
Yeah, I mean, he doesn't know. I don't know. He's insane.
He's a character, yeah.
I'm going to see if I can send this to you right now, actually.
No.
Just a still image from the video so you can see what I'm talking about. I have texted it to you, but it's literally like a hand. Or maybe it is a note. Now that I'm looking at it now, maybe it is like a blank page in a notebook.
Oh,
it's two pages together. But he like literally hand drew boxes.
Yeah, like, it looks like it. Yeah,
it looks like what I did when I was like in fifth grade and I was fantasy booking WWF from like 1997.
Yeah,
you know, and I'd be like, this is what I would do, and I would have these guys on Raw, and I would book. You know, I'm sure we all did it. Like I had like a composition notebook that I would write all these matches in, and like that's kind of what this looks like.
Like one of the squares said, I believe it says Phoenix, and that's the only thing it says. And then it's surrounded by like four squares on top of it, a couple to the right, but yeah, one just says Phoenix. So maybe they had a match at some point, or maybe that's coming up in like 8 months.
Yeah, I'm gonna zoom in on some of this now. Yeah, you definitely see Phoenix. That looks like Jade is written above Phoenix.
That's what I thought too. Yeah.
I don't really understand that. Yeah, I don't know.
It's just orange is two to the right of that.
I mean, this might not. What I'm really interested in, and if somebody does actually know, tell us. I'm interested in whether or not this is actually real.
Bet it is.
It's got to be, right?
I mean, it's so weird. Because if you wanted to fake it, why would you just write down all these names?
Orange, Jade, Orange. Phoenix.
Looks like Eddie to the right, but looks I can't read what's on top of that, but I don't know.
I'm not sure either. Yeah. All right. Well, we'll get to some emails in a second. Let's first get to some phone calls.
Oh. Great.
So let's go first to – oh, this one's in my backyard. Let's go first to area code 781. 781 is a good old Massachusetts number, Andrew.
How about that?
It's Brian Boston. How are you guys doing tonight?
Excellent. How are
doing
you?
Good, yeah.
Good to have another Boston guy on the show. This is good.
Yeah. Wade didn't know what I was talking about when I referred to myself as a child, so I knew you would.
I didn't either. I think I was on that episode.
Yeah. You were, I believe. Yeah, I heard some of that conversation about Tony Khan. I mean, I know he hired the Will Washington guy to, I guess, help with the
That's
writing
right.
and some of the other stuff in general. He needs to do more than that. I mean, now that the darks are gone, which certainly should help, he just, I mean, I'm not saying he needs to hire like 7 or 8 writers, but maybe like 3 or 4 guys and, you know, just delegate. Because, I mean, as much as I hate to say the name, but Vince McMahon, I mean, he did like a lot of the writing himself, but he didn't have like 2 or 3 other like full-time jobs he had to deal with than Khan does. So, I mean, yeah. Either Khan should just delegate the Jaguars thing and Fulham and the static and the statistics company to other people and focus on AEW full-time, or he needs to hire some more people. So, I don't know. I hear Dutch Mantel is free around this time.
Yeah, it's a good point. No, I think you're right. I mean, Andrew, I don't know if you agree. He doesn't need – I don't know that he needs more writers, but he needs someone – he needs a quality control person and more than one, because it's more than a one-person job, I think, who could sit there and say, hey, you know what? Like, boss, we can't do that this week. We did this the week before, remember? Because he's got so much going on. You know, you're booking multiple hours of television every week on multiple shows. I mean, he's going to be up to 5 hours of TV every week that he's got to book, plus all these other jobs that he has. Like, at some point, like, your brain can only handle so much, and I'm sure that things slip through the cracks.
Yeah, and plus, too, he gets, like we've seen time and time again, he gets really excited, like, when he signs somebody new, and then they're all over TV for, like, a month and a half, and then they disappear for, like, 3 months. So he just needs somebody to be like, hey, you know, you don't have to push this person in the main event, but they should be on TV, or there should be an explanation for why they're not around. Yeah, it's just bad. Like, it's just like all over. There's so many storylines that just like kind of disappear or then pick back up. And like just take like why is Mark Sterling with Jade again? Just for one. I mean, they broke up and they did, where there was no real like storyline explanation. They're back together. No storyline explanation. So just like somebody who can clean that stuff up. And it shouldn't be that hard.
Yeah, and I also think, you know, having like now two-hour live shows pretty much solves the problem of the roster overload featuring things. But the time slot on a Saturday night, I mean, that's the best WBD could offer them. I mean, why not just do a Sunday night? There's not really, I mean, other than, you know, like Sunday night football that's pretty much the only sports on a Sunday night you have to worry about. I mean, NHL's not really active on Sunday nights. So I don't know what Warner Brothers Discovery's thinking. Just put it on a Sunday night or something. I mean, it's not like you're showing box office big time release movies on Sunday night or something. But yeah.
Yeah, I thought the same thing. I think Andrew and I talked about this a couple of weeks ago, too, like, because you're so used to watching pay-per-views on Sundays now, and now they're all on Saturdays for the most part. So, I mean, you could do that as a follow-up to your Saturday pay-per-view. What I think it boils down to is my guess is that wasn't a Warner Brothers call. That was probably a Tony call because he doesn't want to go against the NFL. I mean, that was something I think from the very beginning, I think he said, you know, as an NFL owner, we're not going to go against the NFL because of Sunday night football. But maybe they go in and out of season. I mean, you could do that too, where they do that with their pay-per-views, right? Like they'll avoid Sundays during the NFL season and they'll go to Sundays outside of the NFL season. So maybe Collision could go Saturdays from September to January, and then February to September, they move it to Sundays. I mean, I could see something like that happening because I agree with you. I think Sunday's a better night.
Yeah, for sure.
Yeah, maybe there's something, maybe there's some sort of flexibility been planned into that because I have a hard time imagining that Saturday isn't going to get preempted a lot.
Yeah. Yeah, especially in winter sports season where they've got the NHL and they've got the NBA. And, you know, I would think that – and there's just so much other stuff going on Saturdays. You'll have UFC as a competitor every single week. You'll have WWE pay-per-views once a month as a competition at least. Every big boxing match is on a Saturday. Like, everything that's going to be your biggest competition from a combat sports standpoint is all on Saturdays. So – yeah, I agree. I think they're going to get hit a lot.
Yeah, and you know, that doesn't even include people who are, you know, going out on Saturday nights and stuff.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I'll just bring up another point, then I'll let you guys get to other things. The women's division is like a mess. I mean, they're neglecting like the women's championship and the whole originals. Originals Outcast storyline. I mean, like the women's world title has just sort of gotten like a secondary focus. And I mean, it's just not very highly defined with like, you know, where the endpoint's going and things. And the Jade Cargill reign, they need to get that belt off her, because that reign, and it's not entirely her fault, you know, but she's also someone who should have spent at least a couple years in like an NXT type thing before coming up, you know, because pushing someone like that who has never wrestled a match in their life just so quickly, it's like a deer in a headlights sort of thing. So I think there needs just to be some more quality control on the women's side of things.
Yeah, Andrew, I mean, I think we were talking about this too last week with the women's title kind of being out of the picture with the way the storyline's progressed. And with Jade, I mean, Andrew, I don't know if you agree or not, but Jade's been doing the same thing for a year, over a year, like a year and a half almost now, where there hasn't been much different than what she does on a week-to-week basis. So I understand trying to build her up, but at the same time, like, you got to do something different at some point. And if you can't go with her, if she's not good enough yet that you can trust her to do longer matches, then you got to get the title off of her.
Yeah, we were talking about her before, like a week or two ago, and kind of comparing it to Goldberg. But, within a year of, like, Goldberg, he was, like, destroying some, like, name talent. Like when he took, like, out Raven in, like, a minute for, like, the U.S. title, and he was facing, like, bigger names after that. Whereas, like, Jade is still, as we just saw, like, on Rampage, she beat somebody who I think has never been in the promotion before. And, I mean, I guess Taya Valkyrie is the biggest name in quite some time that she's faced. So yeah, they certainly don't seem to have a lot of trust that she can carry like a 10-minute match at this point.
Well, I mean, if it were up to me, I would just retire the TBS title, and because you don't need two women's singles titles. It's not, you know, one women's singles title is enough. And I think just retire that, and maybe with some proper time and development stuff, maybe create women's tag titles, and to just, you know, give the rest of the women's roster something to do. That way you can have some development and stuff, and, you know, at least focus on the singles title more. So, I mean, obviously you'd have to take like some, obviously you'd have to do some belt reduction to make room for that. Like I'd get rid of any Ring of Honor titles, and maybe the TNT and the international title get merged together or something, you know, because you don't want to just add one title overall. So I don't know. That besides that, and maybe having like a writer or two to cover like the women's division, that's just my idea. But anyway, thanks for taking the call, guys, and I'll let you get back to it.
Sounds good. Thanks for the call. Yeah, I think that's a good idea. Consolidating some of the titles does make a ton of sense, Andrew, I think. And mm-hmm. You can't really retire belts necessarily, but what you could do is you could definitely just merge them, like he said right there at the end, right? Maybe you do something where if you want to go with one women's title, you could always do a unification match between Jade and Jamie Hayter, and have Hayter win, and now she's got both belts. You merge it into one, and you've only got one title to worry about. Like, there's ways that you could do that. I don't think that's what Tony's going to do. Tony seems to wants to keep adding belts, it seems.
Yeah.
But at some point, like, there's way too many to keep track of now. And we already had one that you added, and then a couple of months later had to change the name of, and now it's like, wait, what, there's an international? What's the internet? I had someone the other day who watches the show who was like, is the international championship a new one now? Is that another new belt? And I'm like, well, trying to explain it to them. They're like, what? How long? The other one was only around for like 2 months. What are you talking about? They changed the name. Like, it just, people are, it's getting confusing.
Yeah, definitely getting confusing. And that is a trade I would make for sure. Getting the TBS for like some women's tag titles, because there's so many women on the roster and they have like nothing to do. And you know they're not going to beat Jade. Like, that's not going to happen.
Yeah.
And they're not going to beat Jamie Hayter anytime soon. So it's like, what are they doing? They're just showing up on random matches. Yeah, I think that'd be a good idea to give like two women who are on the upswing like an opportunity to have the goal. But yeah, but definitely get rid of TBS. And yeah, I would be all for merging TNT and what is it again? What does Orange Cassidy have? The
international.
International. God.
There it is.
That thing, yeah.
Let's go to some emails. If you are listening and we're calling from area code 308, I saw you there. You just dropped. I was literally about to click on you like 15 seconds later. So if you are listening to the stream and you hung up just because you thought you were going to be on hold for a while, you were literally going to be next. So feel free to give us a call back and I'll get you up right away. The number, again, if you're listening live, 515-605 9345. While we wait to see if that caller comes back up, let's go to some emails. This one's from Zach in Texas. Zach has thoughts on a brand split, potential brand split for AEW. He says, fellas, the unmitigated disaster that was this year's WWE draft should serve as a warning to Tony Khan to not do a hard brand split and or draft of any kind in AEW. A draft is a logistical nightmare. As part of the ownership of an NFL team, Tony Khan knows intimately how drafts work. While that is something of an advantage, it also means that he'd be spending time meticulously planning a draft that more accurately mirrors the NFL's when he could be booking Dynamite in his new show. Besides, that AEW isn't even structurally set up for a draft. Tony Khan is slightly more visible than Jack Tunney role is the sole authority figure, so there's nobody else to make separate picks for each show. Also, AEW is built heavily around factions. Arbitrarily and artificially breaking them up makes no sense. The biggest and most glaring problem, though, is the titles. AEW already has all the titles it needs. They don't need a new brand. They don't need brand-specific titles, and a hard brand split creates an environment where that could happen, as we see with WWE. He goes on. Quickly, we can react to the first part of that email. I think a hard brand split is necessarily bad. I don't think you need to necessarily announce it. Like, you don't have to do a draft, right?
Yeah.
But you could just internally say, these guys are on Dynamite, these guys are on Collision or whatever. And if you really wanted to split it from a title standpoint, like, they've got two of almost every title. So they could do something where, okay, the TNT titles on Dynamite, the TBS titles on Collision. The women's title and the TBS title are split. The international title and the TNT title are split. The tag team and the trios titles are split. One's on each show. And then you got a world champion that can go anywhere, right? Like, you could feasibly do something like that. But I don't think you need to do a draft either. Like, I think you could just internally say, this is our hard brand split type of thing.
Yeah, I don't think a draft would make much sense either, because it's like Tony Khan just competing against himself for the hell of it.
Yeah.
Like, I think the only time it ever really worked for me, like in WWE, was when it was the original, like Ric Flair came in and he got like half the company. And so he ran Raw and you know, if you did like a storyline like that and you wouldn't want to do that because you don't want to make Tony Khan an on-air character. So yeah, I think it's going to, no matter what, it's going to get messy. And I don't know if they'll like officially announce it. I guess like they could run it like Major League Baseball, where there's like these two sides, American League and National League, and then once a year you see who's the best of the best, like a pay-per-view. You could do something like that, I guess, but as we've seen in WWE, there's not a lot of patience on that. And anytime, like, say, the ratings go down, I could see Tony Khan wanting to bring in somebody for ratings. So I don't know. I don't know how this is going to work at all.
Yeah, same. Zach continues, the more prudent course of action would be to have a soft split. Feature the trios titles primarily on one show, the international title primarily on the other. It wouldn't hurt to make the challengers from the international title almost exclusively international wrestlers, the way it was intended to be. Keep Punk and the Elite from appearing on the same show and let the rest of the roster rotate between shows. Don't overcomplicate things. The shows should complement and flow into one another. Dark and Dark Elevation are off the plate as part of the new deal with Warner Brothers, so that they're set to announce soon. If they insist on keeping Rampage, it should be basically a version of Elevation on TV to lighten the workload. This is doable. Tony Khan just has to work smarter, not harder. In other news, Zach says he predicted that AEW would sell 50,000 tickets to Wembley Stadium in the first 24 hours. He says, I was wrong. It took 3 days. Counting the first day of the general on sale, they're up to 60,000. Some unofficial reports even have that number close to 70,000. Those numbers are just absurd, and there's a realistic chance they could sell this thing out. They're breaking all kinds of records. They've already blown past SummerSlam 92, which had 55,000. They're going to surpass Clash at the Castle, which had 60,000. They're looking at having the largest paid attendance for any non-WWE event ever in the largest period and the largest period since WrestleMania in the neck of the woods down at Cowboy Stadium. This is the kind of positive news and momentum that AEW can use to propel itself into a jam-packed summer. On a side note, it's official. Drew McIntyre will not be re-signing with WWE. I hope he signs with AEW so that he can have his moment in Wembley that was denied in Cardiff. I would not mind that at all.
Yeah, I don't think he'll be free, though, until the end of the year, last I saw. Maybe that was also just... I'm Googling him quick just to see if anything pops up like that.
I also could be wrong. This could be like just inflated WWE attendance, but I think SummerSlam 92 was way more than 55,000.
I thought so too, but...
I thought it was in the 80s.
Yeah, I thought, or at least that's what they pushed it as, I thought.
WWE considers the crowd to be the fourth largest live audience to ever attend a WWF event. With 80,355 in attendance, WrestleMania 29 is reported having 80,676. WrestleMania 3, 93,173, blah, 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 blah. Some writers believe that WWF inflated the attendance figure for WrestleMania 3. However, that in SummerSlam 92 had some... Okay, this is interesting. Some writers believe that WWF inflated the attendance figure for WrestleMania 3. However, in that the 1992 SummerSlam crowd actually was larger. Between ticket prices and merchandise sales, WWE made over $3.6 million in revenue. Revenues of reviews of the event are almost all positive, blah, blah, blah. Okay, whatever. So it's a disputed number, the attendance number of 80,000. I'm sure it was papered because everything is papered. Everyone papers their attendance, even AEW. So I don't think 80,000 is a legitimate real number, but 55 seems low to me. I mean, I remember watching the show. The stadium was full, so... It's just a matter of how many of those people paid for their tickets and how many people have their tickets, you know, handed to them.
Yeah. Oh, interesting. Okay, that makes sense. What do you think? Do you think McIntyre is going to show up in AEW?
I mean, when is his contract up? Do you know? Did you say?
I thought it was end of this year, but I could be wrong because it keeps popping up in the news.
Yeah. So, I mean, if it is sooner, then sure. Yeah. I think that's where he ends up at some point.
Yeah, I think so, too, because I don't think – oh, Zach Hagedorn has a story on it. It sounds like WWE has not been, like, offering big money deals lately. They probably don't want to at this point in time, and that's going to affect some people, and especially somebody like a McIntyre.
Yeah, I would think that they almost can't, you know, because of what's going on with being sold. Interesting. So I'm finding some other attendance numbers. WWE officially announced 80,000 for SummerSlam 92. The agreed upon number that I'm finding in a lot of reports is 78,927.
Oh, and just another update. What I'm looking at, Fightful Select says that McIntyre's contract is up in early 2024. So we still got like 6, 7, 8 months of that. Yeah.
Zach finishes his email with building Forbidden Door 2 around the Owen Hart tournament is a very smart idea. Gives that show central hook and something that can be easily woven through and built up on Dynamite. Lastly, the firm deletion was a blast. If
Whoa.
You can't enjoy Stokely Hathaway getting beaten up by Matt Hardy's kids and Rebby, I question your sense of humor. Oh, then Zach is going to question our sense of humor.
Yeah, you can question mine. That's fine.
We talked about that earlier. Sorry, Zach. He will question our sense of humor for sure. Here's the $5 challenge. We'll see if we have time for those in a couple of minutes. Alex from Minneapolis sends in an email.
Oh, boy.
Here we go.
Here we go.
Mike, there's no beef. No beef. In all honesty, I enjoy busting your balls and getting Andrew to corpse. All right. Well, so it's just all in good-natured fun.
What's corpse again? What does that mean?
I don't know.
Huh.
Getting.
I know it's a thing, but I'm behind on what it is. Yeah.
To start laughing in a way you cannot control during a performance, or to make someone else do that.
Oh. Yeah, that works. Okay.
Although you singing "The Fire Burns" was creepy as hell. Was I singing it? I probably was, right? I think I was a couple weeks ago.
The Fire Burns? What was The Fire Burns?
That's CM Punk song. The old one.
Oh, yeah. Sometimes, I mean, the music hits and we sometimes just have to let it out.
Also, Mike, quit shielding Andrew from any criticism and skipping stuff from him. Huh? He's a big boy and should take what... He's a big boy and should take what he gives, especially when he clowns on Tuna Melts, Baron Corbin versus Dolph Ziggler, taking place on Raw, Jimmy Fallon being a clown, Pizza Hut, etc. I don't think I was... I wasn't intentionally shielding things from Andrew. I don't need to protect him.
He knows I'm sensitive. No. Apparently, I don't know. I can handle it, I think. Or maybe I'll have a good cry. Who's to say?
Alex continues. He says, I have a serious question for you, Mike. We've had a long back and forth over Ariel Helwani, but I've never heard you use the same passion towards Dave Meltzer and his involvement with the Elite versus Punk saga. Between the Cabana reporting, Jericho's mother, Teresa betrayal, Punk being an egomaniac, the Bucks being victims, Punk supposedly playing a power play through Dark Harwood to make the Bucks look bad, etc., especially wherever he talks about Punk, Meltzer sounds so sad and depressed. I'm just curious why Meltzer doesn't get the same vitriol from you guys like Helwani does.
Mm.
The Punk Instagram story post was a response at Meltzer's message board comments. I like Meltzer, but the Jericho and Bucks portrayal is obvious. I also wish you guys would go harder on Jericho forcing himself as an integral figure in a situation that he had nothing to do with. CM Punk did call Chris Jericho a stooge. However, I can't think of anything else that happened between those two. It's not like Jericho called him a cancer and told the locker room that he would do everything in his power so that Punk wouldn't come back. It was clearly 100% Punk's fault, whereas Chris Jericho was innocently gardening and helping old ladies cross the street, not getting involved in the drama. The dude spent years saying he'd never work for anybody but Vince in America, and in the second he saw there was more money, well, there was a money mark with actual money he could manipulate, he couldn't book a flight to Jacksonville fast enough. Trust me, I got to work with Punk. We got history. It'll work out great. Jericho, he's doing the fake quotes there.
Yeah.
People think that Punk will come back in Chicago so he won't be a heel, at least not that night. Well, I thought of the way Punk comes out all smiles, recreates the whole AEW debut, but when everybody opens their ice cream bars, they're full of bugs, then he laughs, etc. No, I think so. I don't know, Alex, Andrew. I don't want to correct Alex here because it seems like we're you know in a good spot now.
Yeah.
But I think we did kind of blast Jericho. I mean, I would happily blast Jericho. I think he's acting like a complete moron about this whole thing.
I don't know if I've like blasted him on this specific issue, but he's being silly about this. I mean, he's silly about a lot of things. Like, I don't know. Aside quick, but like, did you see him complain today about getting roughed up by some security at a hotel or something?
No.
He just like goes on Twitter and complains about like, oh, my flight was can't delayed. I'm so mad. Like, it's ridiculous. So he did something like that. That's ridiculous. And if he's the one that like went to Meltzer and it, you know, probably did. And he portrayed himself as being this amazing like locker room leader and he told Punk he would never work with him, like that's also silly, and Meltzer should not like take that word for word and take it with a grain of salt. So there's a lot of silliness going around here.
And the one thing that drives me crazy, and I'll admit, like I think from what in the podcast that I listen to, this happens a lot, is when a news story breaks. Like you're covering the wrestling business. You are obviously you have sources. There's certain things, and I understand that there's certain things that you can't talk about, right? There's things that you get off the record, but you have to leave that completely off the record. Like there's been times where I listen to stuff and you hear him start to say something and then kind of pull back and go, oh, well, I can't share that. Or I don't know. Yeah, we'll have to see. And you can tell he's not sharing something, or then there'll be something that will happen and then we'll be like, well, you know, yeah, I knew this was happening. I just couldn't say anything. And it's like, well, I don't know. I in my other world covering college hockey, there's a couple people that do that, and I will admit they're I guess you could call them competitors of mine. We're in the same business, trying to get the same information, and that stuff drives me crazy in my other line of work because it's like if you know, report it, and if you're not going to report it, don't sit there after the fact and go, well, I knew that was going to happen. congratulations. Like, I don't know what you want me to tell you. Like, so basically what you're saying is like, you know, people are spending whatever it is, $9 or $10 a month to subscribe. You have information that you're not going to report, probably because you got it off the record, and that's fine. But then you're going to tell everybody afterwards that, hey, I know you're, you know, I'm paying to subscribe to your service here, but I knew this was happening. I just didn't tell you. So it's like, then why would anyone continue to spend their money?
Yeah.
That is very weird to me. It's not exclusively to Dave. A lot of people do that, and it drives me nuts when anybody does it. But I feel like I hear that a lot with, well, yeah, we knew that was happening. I just couldn't say anything. Well, then why am I listening to this podcast again?
Yeah. And I know before, too, I was saying, like, I don't think Dave should have, you know, he should have talked to the Young Bucks and be like, hey, can you not use the Meltzer driver name as your finisher? Like, that's a bad look.
Yeah. Oh, 100%. Yeah.
Yeah. I think he probably should have stepped in at some point and asked them not to do that, because it does make it seem like, I mean, you know, if they named it after me, I'd be like, oh, that's cool. But I'm not like, I'm not paying people, you know, people don't pay me for like wrestling news, like they do for him. So yeah, I don't think he should have done that.
Jose from Golden Valley, the story will be told in decades. Brawl out happened. It was a bad night for the company. Tony Khan needed a hero. AEW sells out Wembley. He's the hero AEW needs right now and the one it deserves. The most underrated AEW performer of all time, Double J, Jeff. I like the punch there at the end. We need to get Karen Jarrett working that Wembley show. She was at the top of her game at the Ric Flair last match show. Although the heat both Jarretts generate when they get together, they may not let anyone in AEW come back. Darby Allin recently said that he wants to be the first wrestler to climb Mount Everest. For some reason, it popped into my head. Hogan seeing this and saying, well, brother, the Hulkster's been up to the top of the mountain, and he's walked through that valley in the shadow of death, dude. I can't do a Hogan impression.
Brother. Yeah, Hogan's tough to do. Like, a lot of people, you know, like, almost anyone can do it, like a Savage, but Hogan is... I don't have a good Hogan.
Sorry, Jose continues. I saw the clips posted online of Jungle Boy making an ass of himself during a Q&A at a UK Comic Con.
I didn't see that. No.
I did not. Looked like he could care less about being there. For someone who's known through his Twitter likes that he's a pro elite and not pro punk, he had a deer in the headlights reaction to being asked if he would work a feud with CM Punk. I'm sure that's also his reaction when he's asked to cut a promo. Every time he talks, it sounds like a bore. Never understood how an L.A. kid like him could have such a strong country accent. Then again, Nick Jackson talks like a stoner who's never smoked pot in his life. Jungle Boy has the energy and enthusiasm of a box factory tour.
Ooh, a box factory?
All right. Okay. Lastly, Andrew.
Yeah.
Jose says, it's been 9 months, and I must know.
Yeah.
I don't understand this. Can you say the letter, the word, or else Mike will take a Don Callis bump and this podcast full of PW Torch ads will get nuked like the Stephen King book you read as a child. It's been almost a year and I have no clue what vulgarity would catch a young Socek's attention.
What?
I'm lost.
Something from 9 months ago involving Stephen King, a book I read?
In some sort of vulgarity. I don't
understand. Oh, did I tell that story on there?
I don't remember.
Oh, yeah. I was reading the book. This is the only thing I can think of, and I don't remember telling it, but I was reading the book It by Stephen King, and I was like in sixth grade, and they they used a word in there that I was unfamiliar with. It was like a sexual act, if I can say. And I asked my dad, I'm like, what does this mean? And I said the word. And he just, like, got mad and, like, stormed off and, like, it's something to do with sex and, like, walked away. But
as dads would do.
Yeah. He was not expecting that one because I remember he just, like, walked in and I dropped that on him. Like, as far as I knew, I was like, I don't know. It could have been, like, just the same or anything. I was naive. This is pre-internet, too.
Yeah. Yeah. I remember my having a very similar conversation with my dad when Al Snow was in WWE. Or WWE.
Oh, yeah.
And he'd be like, do you know what that means? And I'd be like, yeah, he's got a head. It's funny. He's like, I know what it means. You shouldn't. And I can't believe you're watching this. Like, I shouldn't allow you to watch this. And he left the room. And I remember being like, what is he talking about? This guy's got a head.
What? I didn't get that either. I'm like,
I don't get this at all. Like, yeah, what does everybody want? Yeah, I want to see the head. Let's go.
Yeah, it was like, I thought it was a literal head, yeah.
Yeah, I had no idea. And he was getting all, like, bent out of shape about it. You know, the old Italian, not Italian, excuse me, a very gruff old Irishman who was like, this is bad, and we shouldn't talk about it. You shouldn't be watching this, and I'm going to leave the room because it makes me feel uncomfortable.
I'll just say, what is the isn't the MMA fighter, is there BJ Penn? Is he the guy, right?
Yes.
Okay, take the first two letters of that, and that's what I asked my dad what it was.
There you go. There you go. So now you know, Jose. Now you know.
It's yourself.
The last email of the night comes from Chad. He says, guys, I was in the queue, but I had to drop off since I'm on vacation with the family. I was the 308 area code caller.
Oh.
Sorry, Chad.
That would have been fun.
I just wanted to email and say that Darby and Danhausen need to be fired, Chad, in Nebraska. Best
I would,
email of the week.
I would mark out, if you will, if he call and that's all he said in last.
And then just hung up.
Yeah. And does it every week.
Every week. That's his gimmick. He doesn't. We go, all right, now next to the 308. 308, you're up next. What's on your mind? Darby and Danhausen need to be fired. Click.
I'm in for this.
That'd be great. Well, Chad, sorry I missed you. Feel free to call in next week. And I'll remember 308. I'm going to remember that.
Yeah.
Andrew, do you have a little bit of extra time? We're pushing up against an hour, but do you have a little bit of extra time?
You know what? For you, I do.
Well, then I've got something for you.
$5 challenge.
It's time. We've got some $5 challenges that were sent in. Let's go to Alex in Minneapolis's one first. He said $5 challenge. Taboo Tuesday / Cyber Sunday ran from 2004 to 2008. Can you name the five main event matches from each event along with the gimmick attached to it?
Oh, man, that's not easy.
That's an interesting one.
I know I have like two of these on DVD somewhere, so I can like picture, like Eric Bischoff has his mouth taped shut on one of them.
Yeah. Let me grab my pen here. Hold on. So I remember, I think there was like a lot of multi-person matches, if I remember. I think that was one of the gimmicks.
I think one was like Triple H, and then they voted between like Shawn Michaels, Chris Benoit, and Edge. And Edge lost, and it like started like a brief heel turn. So I think probably Shawn Michaels got the vote.
So Triple H versus Michaels?
Yeah.
Triple H versus Michaels. Any idea on the gimmick attached to it?
Cage match? Complete guess.
Cage match. All right. I remember one.
Oh.
And I think this may have been the last one.
Interesting.
But I'm not 100% sure if this was the last one or not. I remember it was my first year kind of back watching the product again. ECW was part of the show. It was Booker versus Cena versus Big Show. And it
I
think it was just I think the gimmick was just a triple threat match, but it was like all three world champions were all in one match.
That sounds familiar, yeah.
Book, Cena, and Show. Triple threat. And I think that may have been the last one, but I don't know for sure.
This is a guess, but if you're just going by like mathematics and like what would have a high probability, John Cena versus Randy Orton.
Yeah, that's a good point.
Because they had like 14 singles matches on pay-per-view.
Yeah,
04
to 04 to 08. I mean, that's kind of right there. Let's see. We have to just guess a stipulation. I mean, ladder match? I mean, I don't even know.
Last Man Standing?
Sure. That sounds like something they would do. We need two more matches here, and I don't think either of us know. It'll just be total guesses. Main events of pay-per-views from 04 to 08. I mean, that's the timeline. So I have to assume that, I mean, that could be an Undertaker one, right?
Sure. Taker.
Who was he feuding with the early 2000s? He had a two- or three-month feud with Mr. Kennedy. I don't know if that was around
Kennedy. Batista? I think.
Taker, Batiste, definitely. SmackDown, yeah.
Yeah.
In a what type of match? Casket?
Yeah.
Seems like an Undertaker match, right?
Boneyard match. Yeah, casket sounds good.
Yeah, we need one more then. I don't even know. We already got Cena. We got Cena Orton and we got Taker Batista. Those would have been the matches that were featured most prominently from 2004 to 2008.
Cena Triple H? They fought a few times.
Yeah, why not? Cena Triple H in a...
Five-knuckle shuffle match?
I was going to say two out of three falls.
Oh, yeah, that probably that. Oh, yeah, let's go that one.
All right, let's see. All right. I don't think we did well here. No. Taboo Tuesday 2004, main event. Randy Orton versus Ric Flair in a steel cage match.
Oh, I do remember that.
This must be the one you were thinking one. 2005, John Cena versus Kurt Angle versus Shawn Michaels in a triple threat match for the WWE Championship.
Dang.
That's the only one I see with Shawn Michaels. 2006 was Booker versus Cena versus Big Show in a triple threat. So we did get one.
Nice.
2007, Batista versus Undertaker.
Really?
For the World Heavyweight title. Well, but it wasn't a casket match. It was a Stone Cold Steve Austin, a special guest referee.
Oh, it's at least a 0.5.
Yeah. I think Alex was the one that was getting upset about the half points, too. So we're going to give ourselves a half
point. That's a half, yeah.
I think sure. But I think even Alex would have to make the that has to be a half point. When you're asking for two different answers,
yeah.
If we get one of them, that's a half a point.
Alex is reasonable, so I'm sure he's nodding his head along with us right now.
So, I mean,
yeah.
A half a point when it's like you get one of the two people in a match, I can understand the frustration there. But when you're saying I want the match and the stipulation for a correct answer and you get one but not the other,
yeah.
The half point seems reasonable.
I think that's incredibly, yeah.
2008, Jericho versus Batista for the world title with apparently Austin as a special referee again.
No memory of that one at all.
Same. So one and a half on that one, Andrew.
One and a half. Okay.
If you're keeping score at home, that's a one and a half.
the official record book.
Yes. We've got two more. This one is from Jose Jose from Golden Valley. $5 shuffle. Mike, I shouted like I had seen an execution take place in front of me when you pulled that KM answer out of your ass last week. I know my KM trivia. My dog ran out of my room barking, thinking an intruder had come in. All these questions relating to your everyday life is unsettling. Next time... Next time you'll say how the TV at your sub shop was playing a hit show and a former world champion appeared. Also, I enjoy how you guys amuse my questions. Also, I enjoy how you guys assume my questions are sneaky only to be made foolish.
Yeah.
As university journalism graduates, you should be ashamed for breaking the cardinal rule. Never assume.
Oh, I must have missed that day of class.
Okay. Number one here from Jose. What former world champion appeared on a 2009 episode of Scare Tactics in 2009?
I vaguely remember this.
Do you really?
Yeah, because I used to watch that show a little bit, but now I'm blanking on... Complete cast. Kofi Kingston?
Kofi Kingston, okay. I mean, I was going to say, that makes sense, because like 2009, it would have been, who was a champion in 2009-ish, you know?
Yeah.
What WWE diva guest hosted an episode of Attack of the Show in 2009? WWE diva 2009 guest hosted a show. So 2009 diva, I mean, we're talking, what, Kelly probably? Trish and Lita would have been gone.
Trish and Lita are gone. Michelle McCool?
Yeah, probably Michelle McCool, Jillian Hall era.
I'm trying to think of, like, if any of them were gamers, though. But I mean, that seems like an AJ Lee thing, but that's before her time.
Yeah, probably just before her time.
And Selena Vega's a big gamer, but way before her time. Maybe just, like, Kelly, somebody they...
Who's the one? Oh, you know what? The one that came to mind that I have no idea if this is correct. Alicia Fox is who came to mind.
Ah, the lovely Alicia Fox. Yeah, she just got... I think she just left the company, too, this week. We could do that.
Yeah, I think she did. Number three, Kurt Angle played a bodyguard in what 2015 film?
Hmm.
I have no idea. In a bodyguard in a 2015 film.
What's the movie that came out in 2015?
Yeah, I don't even know. Dark Knight Rises, maybe? Is that 15?
I think that would be... no, that's probably closer to like Superman, Batman era.
Is it
Superman
really?
Versus yeah.
I saw, not to break, you know, to break off from this, I saw something today that if they made the movie Back to the Future today, they would travel back to 1993.
Jeez.
Just in case you want to feel old, they went from 88 to 58, probably 85 to 55.
Oh, man.
So they went back 30 years. So if they were to make that movie today, they're going back to 1993.
I think Nirvana is the big band and, man. Yeah, I feel old now.
It's amazing, like, if you think of how different 1985 and 1955 looked in terms of like, the type of cars and what people did on a weekend. Like, it looked way different. I don't know that, like, 1993 to now is not that much different. It's different, but it's not as drastic a difference as 1955 to 85 was.
Yeah, like, the technology is way different, but, like, aesthetically, I think, I think they're relatively the same.
Yeah. Anyway, sorry, back to Kurt Angle as a bodyguard in a 2015 movie that I have no idea. It's probably some movie we've never heard of. Probably some straight-to-DVD movie.
Oh, I'm sure. Transformers 2.
Transformers
2. He's guarding a Transformer.
Yeah. Stacey Keibler, number 4. Stacey Keibler made multiple appearances on what CBS sitcom?
I think it was that George Lopez show. I think it's the George Lopez
show.
Oh, I don't know. I have to ask my dad.
So I'm a big How I Met Your Mother fan, and I know she was on that show.
Oh.
A few times.
What year was this?
She didn't give us a year. He just said Stacey Keibler made multiple appearances on what CBS sitcom.
Oh, that was definitely a CBS sitcom.
How I Met Your Mother was definitely a CBS sitcom. And so it's funny, I never watched it when it was on the air. I watched it, I binge watched it a couple of summers ago after it had already ended. But that does, I know she was on that show. She probably made 3 or 4 appearances on that show.
Oh, okay. I like it. I trust you.
Number 5, what HBO series did Eric Bischoff, Lex Luger, Tony Schiavone, and Randy Savage all make guest appearances on?
I think it was Arliss.
That makes sense because he was a sports agent, right?
Yeah, he was on an episode of Nitro, too, I think, for like a cross-promotion.
Okay. I never watched that show, but I've heard it was good, and I would like it.
I think I tried it and wasn't feeling it, but I don't know if I even watched a full episode.
All right. All right. Let's see. I'm trying to pull up his answer. Sorry. Number 1, former world champion appeared on a 2009 episode of Scare Tactics. We had Kofi Kingston. The correct answer was Matt Hardy.
Oh, shucks.
What WWE diva guest hosted an episode of Attack of the Show in 2009? We had Alicia Fox. It was Maria Kanellis.
Oh, didn't even think of it.
I didn't even think of her. The movie where Kurt Angle played a bodyguard... I've never heard of this movie. We had Transformers 2. Correct answer was The Last Witch Hunter.
Sounds good.
Sounds good. Stacey Keibler did make multiple appearances on the CBS sitcom How I Met Your Mother.
Nice.
I want to see. I think she played a recurring character. I want to find this on. No one may be interested in this but me. But yes, there it is. Stacey Keibler played a character named Karina, who was a bartender working at McLaren's, the pub that Barney... And then Barney, played by Neil Patrick Harris, tried to seduce her, as he would do on the show.
Oh, and just for the record, Stacey Keibler was on 2 season 6 episodes of George Lopez show.
There you go. So there's 2 answers to that question.
Although I don't know. Oh, with ABC.
Oh, ABC. Oh, okay.
Okay.
So there we go. And then number 5, HBO series, Bischoff, Luger, Schiavone, Savage, all make experiences on. Andrew, you said Arliss, and it was correct. It was Arliss. So that's 2.
Yes. We're doing better. 1.5 to 2.
Better. We are doing better. Okay. Then back to our last one of the night is from Zach. He says, still famous first, but this week's it's only one question with five answers. Easy peasy. Here's the question, he says. First two classes of the WWE Hall of Fame consisted of a total of eight people. Can you name five of the first eight inductees? This is a great question.
Andre the Giant.
Yeah, Andre was the first one. And he went in by himself. Like, he was the only one that went in.
Oh, did he?
He went in alone. I remember that.
So we're okay, so we're guessing, like, the following year? Is that what it
was? So I think the following year was a bigger class. But I know the first year they did the Hall of Fame, Andre went in by himself.
Okay.
So now, yeah, who were five of the first eight people they inducted is the question.
I think
he says the first two classes had a total of eight people. So, and Andre, I know, was alone, which means the second class had seven people in it.
Bobo Brazil.
Really?
Yeah, I'm actually pretty sure because it's somewhat related to some trivia that I have for you.
Oh, okay then.
So I did a little, so this randomly came up. So he went into 94, if that was the year.
Okay, yep.
Yeah.
That would make sense. I don't think Backlund went in until later.
Yeah.
Bruno didn't go in for a while.
I think Grand Wizard? Is that his name? Who's the wizard guy?
Yeah, no, I think it is Grand Wizard. That makes sense.
One Arnold Scaland?
Oh, Arnold Scaland, okay.
These are guesses, but I feel they're like that they're part of that.
Yeah, 100%.
Yeah.
What about Killer Kowalski?
Killer Kowalski. Did he have a WWF?
Yes. Yeah, I only know that because he was local to Boston.
Oh. Like
when he was a Northeast guy. He wrestled in the WWF. I think he was a champion at one point. Wrestled for a very long time and then opened a school in the town where I grew up.
Oh, dang. Okay.
So he actually trained a bunch of wrestlers in a area, like, I'm not even joking, literally three blocks from my grammar school.
Oh, that's awesome.
Is where, like, I think he trained Triple H there.
Whoa.
Well, I know he did because he trained Triple H. Triple H was from Nashua, New Hampshire, which is like probably 45 minutes from that town. And Kowalski trained people. And his school, like, I when I got older and I would walk to my dad's office after school when I was old enough to do that, I would walk by where his school was. You could see the signs up in the window.
Oh, that's cool.
Which is pretty cool. Yeah. So I think that's my guess. Because he would have been like, you know, a 1960s, 70s star. So
yeah, I'm cool with that.
Let's see how we did. We got five here. Andre the Giant was 1993 by himself. So that is a correct one. You were right. 1994, Bobo Brazil did go in.
Yes.
And do we have anybody else? Jeez, I'm not.
Oh, did we? Oh,
Grand,
dang.
Not the. Oh, no, you got another one here. Not Grand Wizard. He was not in that year, but Arnold Scaland was.
Okay.
And Killer Kowalski must have been later because he wasn't either. So we got Andre the Giant, Arnold Scaland, and who's the other one we got? Oh, Bobo Brazil. Oh, some of these are obvious. I can't believe we didn't think of this. Some of the ones we missed, Gorilla Monsoon.
Ugh, yep.
Feel like we should have got that one.
Yep.
Nature Boy, Buddy Rogers.
Oh, I was going to say him, too. Dang
there you
it.
Go. Chief Day Strongbow. Should have got that one, too.
Yeah.
Classy Freddie Blassie. I feel like we should have got that one.
Yep.
And this one, I don't know. James Dudley?
Oh, he was like, I thought he was like a limo driver.
Okay. I don't know who that is. I've never heard that name before.
James Dudley. I think he worked for, yeah.
So he was like a behind-the-scenes guy.
I think it's a super random one, yeah. That he was.
Well, Andrew, we got three there, so that's all we got. That's all the emails. That's all the calls because we didn't get to chat in time. So I don't know, unless you got anything else.
What do you – do you got one in you?
Of course I do.
Yes. Oh yeah. Okay. I'm looking up. Sorry. I was like, who is James Dudley? And people are okay. As a
oh, I'm sorry.
Limo driver. No. You're good. I wanted to clear
one,
that up.
One note as we are on here. This just happened apparently.
Oh,
Impact Wrestling has announced that they are going in July. They are going to go to Australia to tape television, which is interesting.
That is interesting.
So there we go.
That's cool. Yeah, their Chicago tapings looked good, so hopefully they can find places like that to keep going. Keep looking.
They're going to, it looks like, I don't know, the Equex Center in Australia. So cool.
When you first said like Impact Wrestling, I thought you were gonna drop the like Rob Terry.
No, I'd be a lot more excited about that. I wouldn't just go, so they just made this announcement. No, you'd hear me fall out of my chair.
Yeah.
And have to pick myself up. Yeah, that'd be a whole scene.
That's true. I thought maybe it was just like shock, like you don't know how to process the news. But yeah, that makes sense.
Yeah. I just couldn't handle it. I am ready. Sorry, not to interrupt you, but I am ready.
No, you're
good.
For
whatever you have prepared.
$5 challenge for Mike. If he gets all five of these right, I will send him $5. And tonight, I got a really good feeling because tonight's theme is baseball.
Oh, okay.
And it's baseball because when I went to Chipotle tonight, the person behind me was wearing a baseball jersey. And I was like, oh, I'll use that. I'll look up.
Interesting. Okay.
Question number one. What MLB organization drafted Randy Savage?
I don't know if this is right or not, but it's the first team that came to my mind, and I think this might be right. I'm going to say the Chicago White Sox.
All right, in similar vein.
I feel like at some point he may have gone to throw out a first pitch for them or something like that.
Yes. Yeah, he was a catcher, I believe.
Maybe. Yeah, something like that. Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay.
Question number two. What Major League Baseball team drafted Veer Mahan?
Oh, I know this because I watched that stupid movie. I think it was the Pirates. I think it was Pittsburgh Pirates.
His father was a catcher in Major League Baseball. What team did he first play on?
I'm sorry. Can you say it one more time? Hit me with that one more time.
You remember the Kiss Demon from WCW?
Yes.
So it was first Brian Adams, and then it was Dale Torberg. So Dale Torberg's father was a catcher in Major League Baseball. What team did his father first play on?
That's awesome. I love that you thought like this is. I just love that this became a question. Like I want to know how this happened.
Well, because I knew Dale Torberg was involved in baseball. I think he was like a hitting coach. And I think he did that recently. I'm like, okay, maybe if I say that, Mike might know what team he was on. And I think it was like the Marlins. I could be wrong. I'm like, that might be too obvious. And then I was reading up on him, and I'm like, oh, his dad was a player. That could be something. This was like 5 minutes before the show.
Awesome. I just love how like this is like a rabbit hole that ended up I just love it. It's a question that stemmed from a rabbit hole, kind of.
Yeah.
Okay.
Chipotle.
So who did he play for?
Yeah.
Or first play for?
And there was probably like 20 teams back then.
Yeah, that's true.
That's why I used the 5%.
Okay. All right. So Dale Torberg's father. So Dale Torberg. Torberg, sorry.
Such an awkward name.
I can't even say it. He's got to be, I mean, how old is Dale Torberg's got to be in his 50s, right?
I think so. Yeah, he was
so
recently
means,
on Impact, yeah.
Yeah, so his dad's got to be in his 70s or his 80s, which means he probably played, say, 60 years ago. So we're probably talking about a guy that probably played in the 60s or 70s, is my guess. So teams that would have been around in the 60s or 70s. I mean, there's only, like you said, there wasn't as many teams back then.
Yeah.
So you're looking at like the Cubs, the Red Sox, the Yankees, the Dodgers, the White Sox have been around forever. There were no Florida teams then.
No, there were not.
I'm just trying to piece this together.
Yeah, yeah.
The Giants or the Dodgers? Oh no, when did the Dodgers move? I don't know if the Dodgers were in L.A. or Brooklyn. I don't think they were still in Brooklyn. It was 60s, 70s. It would have been in L.A. by then. Yeah, they would have been in L.A. by then. But the Giants bounced around too. I figure it's got to be a team like the – it's got to be the Yankees or something like that. I'm going to go with the Yankees.
Did the Giants bounce around? Where were they from? Is that New York?
I think they may have
– The New York Giants? Is that why the Giants football team, like they're both? Maybe?
I want to say maybe. No, I'm going to look this up. Hold on.
Yeah.
Because now I don't remember. Yes, they were the New York Giants.
Okay.
From 1885 until 1957.
Oh.
And then, did they move to San Francisco in 1957? Yes, they moved to San Francisco in 1958. So there we go.
Okay. Interesting.
If it's Jeff Torborg, I don't know if Dale Torborg's father was Jeff Torborg.
I think so.
But if Jeff Torborg was his father, I mean, Torborg's not a very common last name. He was also, I remember Jeff Torborg as a manager more than I do as a player.
Oh, yes, he was a manager, yes.
Because I think he may have been the first or one of the first managers for the Florida Marlins.
Oh, that would make sense then.
I think. And I think he also managed like the Montreal Expos at one point too.
Oh, that's why his kid was
a coach. Coaching the Marlins, right? Yeah. Or playing with the Marlins, whatever it was. But yes. I'm almost positive he was a Marlins. I don't know if he was the first one, but he was like right around there. It was one of the first ones.
That's a good memory because I used to be super into baseball and that name is not familiar to me.
I don't remember him as a player at all, but I do remember the name. I can't picture him, but I remember the name as a coach or manager at one point.
Yeah.
It must have been like 1999, 2000, somewhere around there.
Oh, okay. Interesting.
All right.
This next one, I know you got this. This is right up your alley. What number did Abe Knuckleball Schwartz, what number did he wear on his jersey?
See, I was hoping that there was going to be – I was waiting for the question where I'm like, yeah, it's Abe Knuckleball Schwartz is the answer.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
What number did he wear in his jersey? I have a vague memory of this. I think he wore 00. I know it was two digits. I think it was 00.
Okay.
And again, I would not have probably known. I'm thinking back to what I watched it, several months ago at this point. But it's not like I remember this from 1994. It was during the 1994 strike. It's not like I remember this from 1994. But I remember because I rewatched that era of Raw probably a few months ago.
Yeah, he was a big time player then.
Huge, yeah. Baseball goes on strike, and what should Vince McMahon do? Come up with a baseball guy. That's what you do.
And this is an Andrew, I have 2 minutes until the show starts question. So this is an all-time dud of a question, just a preface.
Okay.
Question number 5. On August 22nd, 2022, which WWE superstar threw out the first pitch on WWE night during a game between the Rockies and Cardinals? Roughly a 1 in 100 chance.
Okay. Do I get a hint? Do I know who the home team was?
I don't know. I just Googled. You know what? I'm going to help you out. We're going to nail this down. It was a woman.
Oh, well, that takes my guess away. I was going to say Rockies and Cardinals. If it was in St. Louis, it was Randy Orton.
Oh, yeah.
That's where I was going with that. Hometown guy. Okay, but so it was a female. Okay. And it would have been, last August, right? So
yep.
Who would they have sent to do that? That was hot enough last August. I mean, it's got to be. I don't think Ronda Rousey would have done it. It's got to be like Bailey or Charlotte. I mean, I guess it could have been Sasha. I don't think Sasha was out of the company yet. When did they leave? You know what? I don't think they left until later.
It's bad.
This is going to sound crazy, Andrew.
Okay.
But I think I'm going to go... Sasha Banks. I think I am. I don't know when they left. I feel like it wasn't until the fall.
All right. Sasha Banks, question 5. Are you locked in?
I am. We'll try this word locked in sound effect. I'm going to lock in now.
How brutal.
There we go. That's it.
Did you just pick a random one?
Yes, it's Vince. How brutal. So that's my lock in for this week.
I love it.
That's how I'm expecting this to go.
I mean, Vince might say it was brutal. I would say it was a very good effort. You got 2 right tonight. How brutal.
Okay, 2. Okay.
2. Starting off, what MLB organization drafted Randy Savage? You guessed the White Sox. It was the St. Louis Cardinals.
So it's in that general area.
That general area, yeah.
Is he from Chicago? Is that why
I thought he was down, like, the Florida area. Wasn't he in, like, the Renegade territory or something?
Randy Savage. Let's see.
Yeah.
Randy
Savage. I feel like down south, Missouri.
Well, he was born in Columbus, Ohio.
Oh, I knew that, too. Yeah.
Was Italian-American. Poffo family lived in Zanesville, Ohio. He graduated from Downers Grove North High School in the Chicago suburb of Downers Grove, Illinois.
Huh.
I have a recollection of him in a White Sox shirt. I wonder if it was just like because maybe he went to high school around Chicago.
Oh.
He threw out a first pitch in a White Sox game one night. I could be completely wrong, but I feel like I remember seeing Randy Savage in a White Sox jersey at some point.
I just like to picture him wearing one anyway.
Yeah, why not?
Question 3. The Kiss Demon, Dale Torborg's father, was a catcher in Major League Baseball. What team did he first play on? You guessed the Yankees? You said this name, so I thought you might get it, but it was the Dodgers.
Oh, it was the Dodgers? Okay.
Yeah.
All right.
What number did Abe Knuckleball Schwartz wear on his jersey? You guessed 00. You are 1,000% correct. 100% correct.
That's what I'm talking about.
Who threw out the first pitch on WWE Night, August 22nd, 2022? You guessed Sasha Banks. It was actually Liv Morgan, which I think makes sense because didn't she become women's champion around that time or Money in the Bank?
I think so, yeah. No, I don't think they left until the fall. I think that's when they walked out was the fall.
Yeah. So, 2. Good job.
All right. Well, I'll take the 2. So there you go. I'll take it. I'll take it this week. I feel like I'm building momentum here.
You got it. Yeah, you're doing really good. You're doing really good work.
Like I said, it's taken some time, but I feel like we've got some momentum building, which is good.
Yeah, I just have like 20 pages of a Google Doc, like filled with like random questions and random answers. So it's kind of fun looking at the.
Well, Andrew, where else can people find you?
You can find me on the Unexpected Storytelling Podcast. We are planning on putting out our next episode in June. So June, July, August, we're planning for episodes. In the meantime, catch up on old ones if you would like. That is the Unexpected Storytelling Podcast.
You can find me on Twitter at Torch McMahon. You can email the show, alleliteaftershow@gmail.com. You can also call in on Monday nights starting at 9 p.m. Eastern. If you want to do that, you can do so by calling 515-605-9345. And Andrew, I think that's it. I think.
I think that's it.
Yeah, I got nothing else. So thanks again, everybody, for listening and downloading the show and for calling in. And sorry, Chad. Well, I feel like Jimmy Kimmel. Sorry, Chad, we ran out of time, but we'll get to you next time. that's a long-running Matt Damon joke, I think, on Jimmy Kimmel show. So we ran out of time for Chad this week, but we'll catch you next week, Chad. And we'll talk to you later on. So thanks again, everybody. We'll talk to you later. Bye.